Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Work From Your Happy Place. I'm your host, Belinda Ellsworth, and I'm so excited to share my guest with you today. I have Jeff Allen with me. And Jeff Allen's rapid-fire humor, which centers on marriage and family, is a hit with all ages. A live comedy favorite, Jeff has appeared on Dry Bar Comedy, Netflix, Amazon, Huckabee, PureFlex, Showtime, Comedy Central, VH1, and many more. He starred in the critically acclaimed film Apostles of Comedy, the syndicated comedy series Bananas, his own one-hour comedy special, Happy Wife, Happy Life, and the Warner Brothers comedy film Thou Shalt Laugh. Jeff has been featured at Montreal's Just for Laughs Festival and HBO's Comedy Arts Festival. His Dry Bar Comedy videos have amassed over 100 million views on social media and other platforms, introducing him to tens of millions of new fans worldwide. At times both gut-wrenching and hilarious, Jeff's one-man show, The America I Grew Up In, offers a unique glimpse into his crazy world. It is my pleasure to welcome Jeff to our show today.
Hello, Belinda. How are you?
Well, I am doing great. I'm so excited that you're here. I can't wait to dive into this so all of our listeners can get to know you a little bit better. So why don't we start by just filling in some of the gaps of this bio and give us a little bit of a history in how you came about doing this.
How I got into comedy. I was working for a jewelry company back in Chicago back in 1978. And to back up a little bit, my brother was a musician, and he played in a club one night, and I saw some comedians hit the stage, and thought, I was about 16 at the time, I thought, wow, that would be so cool to do that, but how do you learn to do that? If, this may surprise some of your listeners, but it's not part of your normal career day in high school, you know? There's no comedy booth set up. So anyway, I was doing, 3 or 4 years later, I was doing this jewelry show, and somebody said, let's go to the comedy club. And I said, what's a comedy club? And I said, what's for comedians? So anyway, I found out where the club was and I became a mainstay. I was there every night of the week. And they did comedy 7 nights a week. And Thursdays and Sundays were open mic nights. So I decided, it took me about 3 months to work up the courage to hit the stage. And I went up on Thanksgiving night, 1978. And bombed horrifically, just awful. And I went back Sunday for my second shot. And the MC came over to me and said, you're going to have to make some sense tonight. We're still trying to figure out what you said Thursday night. I was nervous and drunk. Not a good combination. So, but that was my start. And it took me, gosh, almost 2 years to really get over the stage fright where it was crippling. But I was there every night and doing whatever I could. So I did discotheques and did wherever I could to learn the craft of stand-up comedy. And 43 years later, I'm still at it. I love it.
That's awesome. So where was the sort of turning point in your career? So I love it for one thing. You saw something, you went after it, you failed miserably at the beginning, stuck with it, and then really took 2 years to master your craft. And I'm sure it's still a work in progress all the time, changing and evolving. But at what point did things really start to take off for you?
I wouldn't say they took off really until the year before COVID. I was 64 years old when it really took off. But I made a living. I got lucky. 1978. By 1980, the world had exploded in comedy clubs. There were actually more clubs than there were comedians to work them. So I was able to hit the road at the age of 23 or 4 years old and learn a craft and be bad at it and still make some money at it. And I did comedy clubs 50 weeks a year, maybe for 4 or 5 years. And then I became a headliner. They Had three acts, usually an MC, a middle, and a headliner. The MC was probably the weakest of the three. Then the middle was a little stronger. Then the headliner closed the show. And I met my wife when I was 30 at a club in Ohio. She was a waitress in the back of the room and had this beautiful laugh. She was a smoker. So smokers have the best laugh. When you can't get oxygen into your lungs, that's music to a comic's ear. So I was on stage and she was back there gagging. And I thought that was just beautiful. So I said, I got to meet this woman. So anyway, I got off stage and walked over and asked somebody, the woman that couldn't breathe, where is she? They knew who it was. It was Tammy. So I went over there and just gorgeous, just absolutely blew me away. And she says, I didn't say this, but she said that the minute she saw me hit the stage, she was going to marry me. She just knew. But I didn't come to that for months. But anyway, I was at clubs for about 15 years when everything seemed to bottom out. And I had to make another change in direction at that point.
And so what did you do? Because that is what a lot of us do face. I mean, like, nothing ever stays the same, right? Comedy clubs were everywhere.
Right.
Just like, you know, country western bars were everywhere.
Right.
And there for a while, and they kind of were running really similar in that same time frame. And then all of a sudden, they're not. There still is some, but they weren't like on every corner.
Right.
So what did you do at that point?
Well, that kind of happened to comedy clubs. All of a sudden, they just weren't bringing in the people. So unless you could draw an audience, the dates were drying up for people like me. I didn't have an audience. I was just the closer of a comedy show. And the money started dropping. And I remember coming home one night from a job and sitting with my wife and going, I got good at something that doesn't matter to anybody. And I don't know what I'm going to do. And we were losing our house. We had just filed bankruptcy. And like a lot of marriages, our marriage was not doing well. And we tried to salve those wounds with buying things we couldn't afford. And that just increased the stress. You know, fortunately, I got fixed so we couldn't add a child to our life. I run into people whose marriages are going bad. You know, if we just had a kid, that would make everything. Yeah, let's raise the stress factor in our marriage another 300%. That would be great. So anyway, we just we ended up just filing bankruptcy and lost everything. And I didn't know what I was going to do. I started some temp work. I was 35 years old, maybe 36. And I didn't want to do these clubs anymore, and I didn't know what I was going to do. And I had gotten into a 12-step program probably five or six years earlier, and I was working those the program and trying to figure out what I wanted to do when I grew up. I didn't know if I wanted to do comedy anymore, and it was the only skill I had had. I barely got through high school. I went to get a job in sales at a car dealership, and the sales manager humiliated me. I went through two pre-interviews before I got to meet the big guy. And I had filed, like I said, I mentioned I filed bankruptcy, and he had my credit report in front of me. And the first question he asked me was, would you consider yourself a success at this point in your life? I said, well, no, you got my history right in front of you. No, this isn't where I expected to be at my age. And he said, why would I hire a loser like you? And I don't know if you've ever been in one of those situations, but the sweat starting to come down under my arm, and I was getting angry on one end and humiliated on the other. And he asked me what I did. I said, I'm a stand-up comedian. He goes, well, what kind of stuff do you do? I said, well, I talk about my wife and kids. And he said, well, give me an example. And I did some really half-hearted part of my routine. And he said, wow, you're not even funny.
Oh, so my goodness.
No wonder you're failing, you know. And again, you know, in hindsight, you look and say, God has to bring you to a point in life, I guess, to where you dig deeper inside yourself and as a man and as a human, you know. And I came home and told Tammy, I'm unemployable. I remember I even applied for a job at Domino's Pizza because I had heard that Domino's builds franchise owners from within. You could start as a delivery boy, and if you show some get up and go, they'll actually put you in a franchise and make you owner. So I decided I would start as a pizza delivery guy and work my way up. And I'd stand in there, some 21-year-old kid with acne, looking at my resume going, what do you do? I said, well, I've been a comic for 14 years or whatever. And he says, what is that? And I said, well, I go out and tell jokes. And he said, how does that qualify you to deliver pizzas? I said, are you kidding me? Are you splitting atoms back there? Are you really asking me how? I said, I drive to addresses and places I don't even live. I imagine how good I could be at driving and finding addresses in towns that in a town I live in, you know? And anyway, he says, I don't like your attitude. And so that's when I went home and told Tammy I'm virtually unemployable. I didn't know what I was going to do. And what came to a head, and this is what's great. So I'm doing temp work. And one night they call me and they say, it says here you're a comedian. I said, I am. And they said, how'd you like to seat people for a Carrot Top concert? And I said, yeah, I don't care. You know, Tammy wouldn't let me do it. When I told her what I was going to do, she says, you're not seating people for other comedians. You are a comedian. Just stop it. Pull your head out of your backside. And if you don't want to do clubs anymore, don't do them. But for God's sakes, Jeff, just you're good at what you do. So do it. Fire your agent. He's got you convinced you're useless. And he did. In hindsight, my agent kept telling me as the money kept dropping, I was lucky to be working for what I was working. I was lucky to be employed. I was lucky to be where I was at. I was lucky. And inside, you know, something isn't right. Something's not right. So I remember I was golfing with a corporate coach, some guy who coaches CEOs. And we just got into conversation. I said, boy, if I can do my life over again. And I was coming up on my 38th birthday or 9th birthday. He said, what would you do differently? And I said, I'd hire somebody to run my career. I don't know how to do it. I'm good at what I do, but I don't know business. I don't know how to work business. And I look at myself as a piece of meat, a commodity. If somebody could take that and make, he goes, why can't you do it now? And I said, I'm a never was. I don't have anything. So why would somebody want to take a 38-year-old comic who doesn't have anything or never had anything to build on, you know? So anyway, a couple years later, I wound up in Nashville and I have the manager I have today. And it's, think we started building. I committed my life to Christ and my faith. And I remember asking my Jewish manager at one point, do you think churches would hire what I do? And of course, you're asking me, what do I know? You know? So anyway, we were the blind leading the blind into the church market. And I got hooked up with a singer named Bill Gaither. I had never heard of Bill at the time. And I had lunch with him, came home and told Tammy, I think I just had lunch with the Elton John at Gospel Music. The guy's packing arenas. And he brought me to one of his gatherings, 15,000 people. And that just kind of opened some doors, just his stamp of approval, just to have his name attached to what I do, gave other people confidence that, you know, pastors were a little hesitant to give me the pulpit, looking at my resume.
Sure.
15 years at casinos and nightclubs. And we started building a new foundation to the career at that moment, you know, with corporate clients and church clients. And I kind of got out of clubs for 20 years. Didn't do but one or two clubs in 20 years. And then Dry Bar hit and some videos went viral and I was able to draw my audience. I wasn't going to go back to clubs till I could draw my audience. And because of the internet and Dry Bar, that was all, you know, before COVID, everything was just on fire. But and we're just now starting to get some momentum. And then lo and behold, the Delta variant comes out. And we're seeing it all over again. People are a little hesitant to come out. So,
Sure. Gosh, that's a great story, though.
It did tells that fill in that, some blanks for you?
Yeah, it sure did. Yeah. But you know what? It tells people that, gosh, you can really start over at any point. I had another woman on my show who had been an anesthesiologist for years, like a 30-year career, and then decided to retire and become a stand-up comedian at the age of 65. And like, wow. It's like, I know. And she's like living life and having a ball. And but people just sometimes think I'm too old for that, or I've already had my shot at that, or that ship has sailed. And you want to know what? That's never really true if it's something
that's
you really love doing.
That's not true. Yep. That's a lie you tell yourself to avoid the risk.
That's absolutely right.
I hit the gym at 60, and I'm in the best shape, physical shape I've ever been in my life. And I was an athlete in up to college. So it's never too late to turn things around. And you just need focus, and you kind of have to have an idea of where you want to end, so you can begin to start and then take those steps. And sometimes you zig and zag your way to the end, but you've got to at least know what it is you'd like to do. And that Oprah, I remember Oprah did a thing on this. She said the hardest thing for a human being to do is to admit what their desires are. Most people, if you ask them what do you want out of life, will have no answer. No definitive answer. Well, I want to be happy. I want a good job. And the more focused you can get, and for me, it was hiring a manager that just kind of, he focused on what he wanted for me. And I didn't know what again, when I started, if you'd asked, what do you want? I just want to do stand-up comedy. And today, that's really it. I don't have a goal of being rich or famous or I want to do great work. That's my goal. So when I sat with somebody, I said, look, I'll do the work, but you take care of everything else. And for that, I'll pay you. And he said, great, because I can't do stand-up. And I said, great. That's all I want to do. I want to get good at what I do, and I want to get better at it. And the older I get, the better I get at what I do, because that's my focus. I don't have to worry about anything else in my life outside of my marriage and then my stand-up. And I'm in the process now of writing a book, and I'm in the process of putting a theatrical one-man show together with the help of another guy, because I don't have the skill set to organize my thoughts into a theatrical production. I hired somebody who knows. He goes, I can do that. I love what you do. I love your story. And I think we can put this together in a entertaining, funny, and poignant, meaningful way. And I said, that's what I want to do. That's the last thing I want to do with my talent, is a theatrical production. And I want to get it down on film so that my grandkids could see the struggles and the triumphs of the arc of a life. It's not a constant trajectory up. There's a lot of pitfalls and valleys and learning experiences. And again, you know this, that, and I'm sure your listeners do, that the trials are what make you.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody once said, if you don't think trials and tribulations are the best things in life, then just give your kids everything they want up until the age of 12 and then try to control them after that.
Right. You know, I think that's in those, that's why people never see that real success or happiness, is because the fear of the trial and the fear of the failure and the fear of, you know, the pitfalls is so overwhelming to them. But when you're in it, you just take them as they're coming and you keep moving, right. And you're like, okay, what's next? And how do I navigate my way out of this? And it's the journey. And gosh, yeah, I've had, you know, I mean, we think we've just, like, even with us, we launched this new planner this year. Sales are going fantastic. I increased the size of the box just a little bit, thinking, okay, this will be better because. And it was a foolish thing. And like, so now I'm getting all these pictures of these boxes caved in and people's products are all like messed up and I'm having to send back out. So, but, and so then last night it was just like, oh my gosh, but it really in the, you know, I was starting to get really upset. I'm just like, I can't get this right. And my husband said, it's one tiny thing. Like, you know, like, look how well things are going. You can't get focused on this one right. piece of it. So today we were like, okay, what kind of filler are we going to put in these boxes to help them not get crushed in shipping? So really at the end of the day, you just have to, you're going to have things and you're going to have issues, but you just got to figure them out and keep moving and not look back. But if you were so afraid of what if this happens, what if this happens, right. what if this happens, you're never going to get the joy, the sheer joy of doing what you love to do.
Right. And we're going through it now with these COVIDs and everybody's got different mandates and rules and,
yep.
You know, should I make an announcement? Should I not make an announcement? You know, we got a theater that mandated a vaccine passport and a COVID test, and that goes against my principles. You know, I can't get out of the contract, and Tammy's afraid. You know, I just want to work. That's all I want to do. I don't want to get involved in any of this stuff. But at some point, we're going to have to make an announcement that, you know, again, I'm vaccinated. I did it because I thought it was a vaccine. Now, as the information comes out, it's more of a therapeutic than a vaccine. They're talking about all the people who have vaccines that are getting the COVID or the Delta variant, whatever it is, you know, and all this stuff has become political, and it's charged politics. It's just like people have dug their heels in, and there's no minds that they're just shutting. And they're getting angry. And it's like, I don't want to get involved in this. I just want to stand up and do my show. And I'm not a policymaker. I've tried to stay out of the fray. That's my point.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm getting pushed into the arena of where do you stand? Where do you stand? And I stand on choice, free choice. You want it, get it. You don't. Want to wear a mask? Don't wear a mask. I'm not afraid of, I've been, again, if the vaccines work, I'm going to live my life as if they work. And I'm out taking pictures with people. I'm shaking hands with people. I'm living my life. I'm not going to cower in fear from this thing. And if I end up passing away from COVID, then I've had a good life and I've loved well, I've performed well. I mean, I've lived my life. You know, I don't know if you ever read Howard Hughes's biography, but that was a man who tried to live germ free. And I think everybody should read that. It was a sad, pathetic existence for a billionaire.
Mm-hmm.
He died alone in a room with just, I mean, it was just pathetic. I mean, it was sad. When I read it when I was in my 20s and I thought, wow, how pathetic, how sad, you know? So anyway, I don't know how we got on that, it's things that come into your way that are out of your control.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to force me to do something that I thought I could avoid having to do, but I'm going to have to make a video and send it out on where I stand on all of that. And, hopefully, you know, people will come out. I was just told tonight, I'm in a theater in, North Carolina that they're probably having half the crowd because of the Delta variant. People are just getting skittish again. They don't want to go out.
Right.
And it's out of my control. I can't control that. So
that's right.
You know.
Well, let's talk on a happy note. Let's talk about what's been one of your greatest accomplishments? What's something that is a standout for you that you're like, wow, that was awesome when that happened?
Well, I can tell you, getting sober and staying sober was a major accomplishment in my life. But as far as a performance, wow. I guess being the performances weren't good, but being able to land on an aircraft carrier in the middle of the Indian Ocean at the start of the Afghanistan invasion, they just started night ops to Afghanistan, and we landed on their ship, my son. So to be able to travel to the other side of the world with my boy and do shows for the troops, that's a highlight. That really is, to be in Bahrain and again with my son. And he ended up joining the army based on that trip. He got a chance to see the military firsthand, and proud of his service. He was with the 101st Airborne. So That's a highlight. And that first show with Bill Gaither in front of 15,000 people, I had never worked anywhere near that in front of that. And that first line I delivered, when you hear 15,000 people just laugh, it was like, holy cow, I could get used to that.
That's awesome.
That's amazing.
That is amazing. So we've talked a little bit about the navigation between business and artistic side, and I think you've pretty much answered this. We can like talk to it a little bit more, but it's the hardest thing for an artist and is to navigate both of those. And for you, it's handing it over to somebody else to just handle. And so that would be then your advice to anyone else, because they're two different skill sets.
Right. You have to know your strengths and your weaknesses. And I have strengths, obviously, and I have weaknesses. And when I got my manager, I was 50-some thousand in debt to the IRS and bankrupt. So I had a pretty good track record of how I ran my career. I couldn't sit in a chair and go, you know, if I'd done this, I wouldn't, you know, no, I did everything you can do wrong. And even though it felt right, I mean, obviously you don't sit in your house and go, let's see, how can I be bankrupt and how can I end up owing the IRS? So I hired a business manager and I hired a personal manager. And, they got me on track financially. The business manager, his job was to just manage the money. And the personal manager managed the career. He made all the decisions. And again, it was one of those, I can remember a couple of decisions that were made I wouldn't have made. And my wife said, why did you let him do that? And I said, look, if I'm going to pay a guy to manage my career, if I'm not going to listen to him, what's the point?
Wow, that's a huge, huge point right there. Because lots of people hire coaches. They hire consultants. I'm hired as a consultant. And I can tell real early on when that's going to be a good relationship, because if they're not willing to do the things you're telling them to do, it's like, what are we doing here? Like,
right. Absolutely. I know a lot of guys who want to learn how to play golf well, and they won't listen to the person trying to teach them, because you get worse before you get better.
Yep.
Because they're changing bad habits. So if you're used to spending every nickel that comes into your pocket, and then all of a sudden somebody says you can't spend money on that, initially you pout. You know, but then you realize, you know, 6 or 8 months later, you actually have money in the bank for the first time in your life. So they're doing their job. They're doing what you pay them to do. And otherwise, don't pay them. If you're not going to listen to them, don't pay them.
That's right. So let's talk about, you said, I've really started to build an audience now. So let's talk about maybe three things, or so what are some tips you can give and ways that you engage your audience or your fan base? How do you build that up?
I have content. It was interesting. I was just talking to I hired a social media guy. I was just talking to him, what do you need more of? And he told me we need more pictures on Instagram. I said, why? Who cares what I eat? You know? And anyway, he said, he showed me the metrics. He goes, when you're engaged with your fans, there's more engagements and views and whatnots. But when I hired him, I had three DVDs that I had taped. I had 3 or 4 hours of comedy content that he was able to break down and put 2 to 3 minute videos out on Facebook. So we try to put out funny videos, because that's what I do, funny. Mm-hmm. But occasionally I'll make a promo video for a job, or I'll sit and talk about if something happens that's serious, in Tammy and our lives, then I'll share that with my fans. And I try to engage them on that. And I try to engage by commenting on their comments on the fan page, to let them know that I do appreciate. Every night before I leave, I tell the audience, I couldn't do it without you. And at my age, to have the success that I'm having is really unheard of, to be on a trajectory up in stand-up comedy at my age. So it's a blessing. And but I hired somebody again that knew, prior to hiring my social media guy, I had maybe 7,000 or 8,000 Facebook followers. And if I got 1,000 views on a video, that was a great video for me. I hired him within 2 weeks. He says, "You got your first viral video." I go, "I do." He goes, "Yeah, we're up at 600,000+ views right now."
Wow.
2 weeks it took him to do that. So he said, just keep engaging as much as you can, and I'll keep posting videos. So people were sharing stuff that they had, and they kept saying, "Where is the? I never heard of this guy. Where's he been?" So I was out there for, 40 years. Before I hired this guy. So, I have young comics come to me and say, "I want your social media guy." And my social media guy calls me and he says, "But they have 20 minutes of content. They have, that's it. So you got to have something to feed the beast." And now after 3 years of doing what we've been doing, I'm getting emails from people. "We need some more new stuff." Well, I'm hanging on to the new stuff for the live shows.
Sure.
So that when people come out, they hear things they haven't heard on Facebook. So it's this balancing act of they want news. The comedy's not singing. I mean, if somebody will listen to the same song 40 times, you know, we went to see Blake Shelton the other night at the arena in Nashville, and if he didn't sing some of those classics, we would have been ticked off. You know,
right on. That's right.
Yeah. So comedy's a different animal. They want new. They want different stuff.
They do, but I think there's also a tell that one. You know, people do right. Like they want that shared with their friend or whoever they're bringing along. I think there is a little bit of that, though. Like, "Oh, tell that one where you did that."
Yeah, I get requests. I get requests.
Yeah, absolutely.
For the wee papa, wee papa. I hear that people yelling it out.
Yeah. What does working from your happy place mean to you? It's kind of our signature question of our show.
Doing stand up just in front of a live audience that's engaged and just connected. And there are just nights that are magic. And, Tammy will ask me after the show, "How was it?" And I'm going, "Just amazing, babe. It's just amazing. I just still love it after all these years." And I do tell the audience, I hope it comes across that I'm not going through the motions. I'm working harder than I ever have on writing and performing. So just performing is my happy. It's all the other 23 hours a day that I have a hard time with. Yeah. You can only golf so many holes, you know. I had a good friend of mine retired. He goes, "So what are you going to do when you retire?" I go, "I'm not going to play golf 5 days a week. I can't do that. As much as I love golf, I couldn't do it."
Right.
Yeah.
So tell us about, you were talking earlier about Dry Bar and what an amazing thing that has been. For our audience that doesn't know what that is, why don't you give us some insights?
Well, it's an app you can put down, and it's a company from, it's a subsidiary of VidAngel. Who did The Chosen, but they're Dry Bar Comedy. It's a dry bar in Provo, Utah. They don't serve alcohol, and they tape every Friday or Saturday comedians, and there's hundreds of them on their app, and it's usually 99.9% clean. And when I first heard, when my manager called me, he said, I booked you on Dry Bar Comedy. I go, "What's that?" And he says, "I'm not quite sure, but people say it's good." So anyway, when I told my wife, she said, "Oh my gosh, it's in my feed every day." I go, "What do you mean?" She goes, "Every day I get feeds from Dry Bar Comedians on Facebook. It's the first thing that pops up." I used to hear her in the kitchen laughing, you know, and as a comic, you know, it's like a violation of our marriage vows. You can't laugh at other people. So I'd run out and wonder who she was laughing at, you know, but they're just 2-3 minute clips. They have, the last I checked, and it was probably over a year ago, they had over 6 million followers on Facebook. So they get it out to people. And when they posted the first of my clips, it went viral, like to 30, 40 million views relatively quickly inside a month, 2 months. And the phone just hasn't stopped since. And Dry Bar changed my life. I likened it to back in the 70s, if you did the Tonight Show and Johnny Carson brought you over to sit on the couch your first time. And the next day your career just took off because Johnny gave you the, so for whatever reason, the Dry Bar fans liked what I did, and they were willing to share it with all of their followers on their Facebook page, and it all adds up. And it's an interesting time we live in, where people see you on the computer, they look at that as the same as seeing you on television. You know, I always looked at it as I my time had passed because I never did a network show. And by the time I got to the round to where I was really qualified to do a network show, I was living in Nashville. I was done with New York and LA, and I was just kind of resigned myself to doing churches and corporate. And, you know, I made a decent living. I made a good living, you know, and I was happy doing what I was doing. And to have this hit like it hit, it just blew me away. I mean, I couldn't get my hands around it. Tammy would look at it and go, it's up to 60 million, 70 million. I go, are you kidding me?
Wow.
Yeah, it was just amazing. And my manager calls and he said, the quality of work that's coming in now, it's and it's interesting, you know, the conversation went from, we want Jeff Allen for this particular date to, can we get him for this date? And that's a completely different perspective on where you're at in your career. I started turning work down for the first time in my career by the end of August that year. I just had so much work. I sat with my wife. I said, look, you know, our marriage almost fell apart. Years earlier, I was getting audited by the IRS and they said, how long have you been out? And I looked and saw 228 days. And I realized, I said, no wonder she's leaving me. My gosh, I'm never home. And, we made a decision to sell our house and cut our lifestyle in half. So I didn't have to travel so much to pay the bills. You know, you realize, I did anyway, that I was a slave to some debt, you know, and then after filing bankruptcy, I didn't want to take on any more debt. And to this day, I don't, outside of, you know, my house, I don't carry any debt.
That's awesome advice too. So any additional advice that you would give to some of these young artists just getting started out?
Read. I don't know about songwriting. I don't know about any of that, but as a stand-up comic, I can tell them just read everything you can get your grubby little fingers on, from pop culture to the classics, Moby Dick, to, that's where your references and your cadence. And, you know, when I started reading in my 30s, I never read a book until I was in my 30s. My vocabulary changed. My worldview changed when I started, you know, reading other things. A lot of self-help I read. You have more things to draw on the more you educate yourself. So, that's the lie. The school system tells you that if you drop out of high school or you get out of high school, your education stops at that point. That's just such nonsense. We live in an amazing time. I mean, on the internet, I was listening to two, a physicist and the guy who mapped the human genome. One was a Bible believer and the other one was not. Have a debate, and it was fascinating, just fascinating to listen to these two intellectuals debate two sides of an argument, and with respect towards one another. And it's something that's lacking in today's culture. But yeah, that's my advice: just educate yourself, read as much as you can, and for God's sake, smile. My Lord, I had a guy tell me that one of the corporate coaches said to me, he goes, you don't smile much. I go, what's there to smile about? He goes, man, you got to work on that, you know. And I remember going into my mirror in my bathroom and trying to smile and looking at myself and going, this is stupid. I'm not doing it. I couldn't look at myself in the mirror. And it took me weeks to get to the point where I could smile. It was hard work. It was hard work. But it's your calling card. You know, you've heard that. It's your calling card. People are relaxed immediately when you reach out and smile. I know I'm 6'2", you know, 190 pounds. I'm a big guy. And when you're scowling and angry, you know, that's puts people off, frightens. You don't know what, certainly women in the audience, you don't know what they've been through in their life with men. And if they can't relax because they see the anger coming off you, it's not cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I've always taught about enthusiasm being one of the key ingredients to success, because people are attracted to it and they want more of it and they want to know what you're excited about. And And but I'm just reading more and more on it, just how it that lights up that part of your brain, how people, it creates more creativity, right. creates more enthusiasm. So it's I've been doing a lot more research on enthusiasm. Just simply, I've taught it as a just I know what it's done for my business, and people do mirror what you put out. So if you're putting out happiness, if you're putting out a smile, if you're putting out funny, if you're putting out enthusiasm or excitement, people will mirror that back with you. They'll fall right into cadence with you. And if you're putting out, you know, unhappiness or just like you said, anger, if you're putting out a feeling of lack of confidence, people fall right into that cadence with you.
Yeah. People pick it up, you know, it's a existential thing, but they'll pick it up. They'll feel it coming off you. If you're bored or you don't believe what you're talking about, or, you know, I'm working on a new routine that's completely made up. Everything I do has a hint of truth to it. And it's on Alexa, and I just can't sell it. It's funny, but I can't sell it. And I just say that Alexa is like living with my wife's sister. She's always chiming in at the wrong times. And Tammy will say, you agreed to dinner with Bob and Debbie. And I go, I hate Bob and Debbie. Why would I agree to dinner with them? And then Alexa chimes in, Jeffrey, you agreed to dinner 2 days, 14 hours, 7 minutes and 6 seconds ago on April 5th, 2021. And I go, shut up, Alexa. Nobody heard talking to you. But I can't sell it because it didn't happen, you know. So I'm thinking of doing it as a sketch for Facebook. I'm in the process now of putting together some sketch comedy for Facebook, and it would make a better sketch where I'm talking to my wife and then Alexa chimes in. You know, that would be funny. That would be funny. But it's
absolutely
But anyway, that's again, it's about selling inside your insides.
Yep.
Because people will sense that, and I heard somebody told me this years ago. There are three things that drive people: the desire for success, the desire for money, or desire for recognition, the desire for, which is fame or recognition for your work, or money, or just the sheer desire to do good work at what you do. Any one of those three will drive you to the other two. You'll get the other two. You can't be recognized unless you do good work. And if you're recognized and you do good work, you'll get the money. The money will come. Mm-hmm. So money has never been a driving force in my life, much to the chagrin of people around me, but the desire to do good work. And then now I'm trying to grow the recognition because I want more of that. I had never had it. And now that I have some, I really want more of that. It's intoxicating to walk into a room full of 500, 600 people who saw you on the internet and just want to be part of your life for an hour and a half. And gosh, it's just amazing to me.
Well, Jeff, this has been delightful. Thank you so much for your time and sharing of your journey. I think it's something that other people can resonate with and be hopeful with for a lot of people out there that maybe have given up on their dream. So thank you so much for sharing with us today. And in closing, can you tell our listeners where they can find you?
JeffAllenComedy.com is the website, and then there's icons on there you can click to connect to every all the social media. JeffAllenComedy.com.
And perfect.
Like I said, we're coming up with new material and new content as fast as I can put it together. So
wonderful. Well, to all our listeners out there, thanks for joining us today on Work From Your Happy Place. We hope that you'll subscribe or follow so that you don't miss a single great episode. And the best form of compliment that you can give Jeff or myself is to share this with a friend. So we'll see you next time on Work From Your Happy Place.
Thanks for joining us at Work From Your Happy Place. If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends and be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. For a free gift on finding your own happy place, please visit workfromyourhappyplace.com and click on the free audio button. Thanks again for listening.